This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in it.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology. Marriage.
Essentially ethics. Privacy.
Throughout the month of January, Rethink 2014 has been a forum for challenging our assumptions and habits and approaches to big ideas like love and marriage and poverty and faith. We're wrapping up the series with perhaps the most difficult concept, our inevitable demise. Not something many people want to think about, never mind plan for. 82% of people say it is important to put their end-of-life wishes in writing, yet only 23% have actually done it. While most people would prefer to die at home, 70% die in a hospital or a nursing home or long-term care facility. So do we need to rethink how we approach death? I'm joined by Ellen Goodman, co-founder of The Conversation Project. That's a campaign designed to provide families with the tools to raise the seemingly radioactive conversation about the end of life. You may well know Ellen Goodman as Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and a syndicated columnist appearing in the Boston Globe, among many other newspapers and places. Ellen Goodman, a hearty welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much.
This project was inspired by your own experience when your mother became ill. Had you ever discussed end-of-life matters with her?
When my mother was coming toward the end of her life, I was her healthcare decision maker. And I want to say that my mother and I had talked about just about everything in the world. In fact, I once described her as somebody who would talk about your problems until you were bored with them. But the one thing that we hadn't really talked about was how she wanted to live at the end of her life, the care she wanted, the care she didn't want. And she had dementia at the end of her life, so it was too late to have this conversation. And I realized that I was not alone. I think a lot of times social change comes about because people are holding some experience very close to their heart, thinking they were the only one who had it.
Hmm.
And it's only when we share our stories that we realize we were not alone. And I began to share this story with others, and I realized, my God, everybody has a story of a good death or a hard death. And very often the difference between those is whether they had the conversation.
So we all know the end of life is inevitable. Why is that talk so scary, even though people know they have to have it?
You know, it's interesting. I think we all know it, but sometimes you don't want to say it out loud. Even if you know it, you may feel that it's not something you can bring up with another person. We talk a lot in the Conversation Project about opening up these conversations, about changing the cultural norm from not talking about what we want to talking about it. We particularly think a lot because of the demographic changes, because of the longevity revolution, because the baby boom generation is now turning 65, you know, at the rate of 10,000 a day. And guess what? They still have parents.
Hmm.
And they're often the caregivers of their parents. And while 60 may be the new 50,
right.
60 is also the new caregiver of the 85-year-old. And we realize that in those conversations between adult children and elderly parents is often a kind of conspiracy of silence, so that the elders don't want to worry their children, and the children don't even want to suggest to their elders that they might ever die.
Right.
And when we do maintain this conspiracy of silence, what happens is that we leave each other alone and isolated. And very often, survivors are left guilty and uncertain about whether they did the right thing.
People are living longer than ever, as you mentioned. So when should we have the conversation?
Well, the Conversation Project really believes that you have to have these conversations early. I mean, one of our expressions is, it's always too soon until it's too late.
Huh.
And you should have these conversations before there's a diagnosis, and God knows, before you're in the ICU. The earlier you have these conversations around the kitchen table, not in the doctor's office, the easier it's going to be.
I've actually read about these death over dinner, happenings that people are having, partly inspired by your project, The Conversation, where people invite family members, close friends, and actually talk about this over dinner. which does seem astounding to me somehow, you know, that this is not really dinner conversation. What is this conspiracy of silence about? You know, you talk about the sort of confronting mortality, but how about on a cultural level? Why are we so afraid of death?
Well, it's not something that we're very eager to jump into.
Right.
You know, I think it's pretty simple. But at the same time, everybody knows the reality. There's a wonderful line from The Onion, this online satirical magazine, that says death rate holds steady at 100%. You know what I mean? So we all know, but everything in our technological world and in our medically technological world seems to suggest that death is an option and that illness is something that will be conquered. We always talk about somebody when they do die, dying after a long battle.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Ellen Goodman. You may well know her as a syndicated columnist or journalist, but we're talking to her about The Conversation. It's a project that she began as a daughter, wanting to honor the wishes and hopes of her mother around her end of life. She's hoping that other people will have that same conversation. Well, speaking of technology, looking at modern medicine, we do have a little more agency in how we die, don't we? I mean, the likelihood of quietly dying in your sleep at home is getting slimmer and slimmer. So what kind of choices do people have to make about the technology that's used around their end of life?
Well, we believe that the technology isn't as important a discussion as the values. And what matters to you is more important than what's the matter with you. You're never going to be able to create a list that checks off every eventuality and predicts every eventuality. What you have to be able to do is find somebody who understands and trusts what it is that matters to you. Say your first concern is that you want to be comfortable and at peace. That is a value. And people can make decisions according to that value. Say it is that, as you mentioned, the statistic that said 70% of people want to die at home, but 70% of people are dying in institutions. So if your value really is that you want to be at home, people who are helping with your healthcare decisions, if you're not able to make your own decisions, should understand that and should help make that happen. In a funny way, we talk sometimes about this expression in medicine that's become quite popular, which is preventable harm.
Uh-huh.
And harm we often think of as, say, if you go into the hospital and nobody asked you whether you were allergic to something and then you had an allergic reaction, that would be a harm that would have been preventable.
Right.
Well, dying in a way you do not choose is a harm to you and to your survivors. And it's preventable. It's preventable by having people express their wishes and by having those wishes respected, both by the people around them, the people they love, and by the healthcare system.
I really appreciate that placement of values or basing it on values, but I wonder about the practical applications of this. Like, is this just the beginning of a conversation about DNR? I mean, you know, that kind of medical directives, for example, you have to go much further, right?
We have begun. What our project is about beginning a national conversation that goes from not talking about the wishes to talking about them. We send people, and we have talked with a lot of people and medical providers, healthcare providers too, about the rest of the continuum, about advanced directives. We have talked with a lot of doctors. One of the interesting things is when we present to doctors, too, the first thing we do is sit them around a table, spread the red and white check tablecloth, and ask them to talk about what their wishes are. And that doctors and healthcare providers aren't often called upon as people. They're mostly called upon to react as professionals. So this has been a real interesting stretch for many of them, and it's made them realize and change some of their relationships with their patients.
Well, you're alluding to a couple of different things here. One is this idea that we somehow have control over this, you know, that if we plan it out well enough, there's a sense of control. But also the idea that maybe we could have the discussion about our parents' death or a loved one's death. But do we really think about our own death enough and what we want?
Well, we have a conversation starter kit which really makes it easy, or easier. These conversations are never easy. And just as of Monday, we hit 100,000 downloads. So 100,000 people have come onto our website. Half of the people who have come onto our website download the starter kit because they're looking for help in having these conversations. And the first thing we often say when we work with groups is to, first, you have to have the conversation yourself. You can't have it with your parents or your husband or your friend or your doctor until you've really thought about it yourself. So we give people many different kinds of questions that we give them to think about and to mull over before you talk to others about it. You know a lot more what you think and what you want than you may recognize at first. First of all, I think most people have had an experience, and that experience, that story that they live with of a good death or a hard death, may very well foreshadow and make them understand what is important to them.
Well, Ellen, I am among those who downloaded your starter kit, by the
Thank
way.
You. So there were 99,999 and you.
And thank you so much, because it really is something to look at. Your four basic steps, getting ready, which you were just alluding to, but then the get set step, step two, the kinds of real conversations that help us get to these values. You know, what matters to me at the end of life is, what matters to me is, what role do I want to play? Interestingly enough, questions that seem very life-affirming. So in a way, is this an opportunity to just reassess what we want in our lives as well as our deaths?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Conversation Project isn't really about death. It's about how you want to live towards the end of your life. So in that sense, too, it's very much about your relationship with other people, for example. One of the things that we have heard so often is that siblings will argue at the end about what should happen to their parents. And the last thing you want as a parent is to leave your children arguing at your funeral, you know, about whether they did the right thing. You want your families to feel comfortable, and that's one of the primary reasons why we should have the conversation. And by the way, one of the easiest ways to start these conversations is the storytelling. So we have collected and shared a lot of stories on our website as well.
And how about for you, Ellen, personally? Have these stories inspired you to look at your life differently and the way you want to live
it? I think that's right. I think the story both of my mother's death, but others in my family, and of my sister who died a year and a half ago now, these stories all made me think about what it is I want. And I think in particular made me very careful in terms of sharing that with people who I know will respect what I wish.
Ellen Goodman, thank you so much for sharing this project with us.
Thank you very much.
Ellen Goodman, co-founder of the Conversation Project and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and syndicated columnist. Her work can be found in the Boston Globe, among other places. If you think it's time to start the end-of-life conversation, and according to Ellen, probably is, you can find a link to the starter package on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.